Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, May 12th. Here we are in a morning where the complicated economic recovery from COVID became even a little more complicated with another surprising new number. As described by MarketWatch, the consumer price index jumped 0.8% in April, four times more than economists predicted in a Wall Street Journal poll. That means the April jump pushes the annual inflation rate to 4.2%, the highest since 2008. Now, this comes after April's surprisingly weak jobs report that came out on Friday, under 300,000 new jobs, fewer by hundreds of thousands than economists had predicted, and with the unusual duality, therefore, of many job openings, but not that many new hires. So those don't seem to fit. Fewer new jobs, but rising prices. And then there's the surge in growth rate, somewhere between 6 and 11% growth in the economy. Wow. But that was expected because things had gotten so slow in the depths of the pandemic. Many times close to zero isn't necessarily that big, but it is a big growth rate. But again, how does it fit in with so many people still hurting, a looming eviction crisis, and more? But the Federal Reserve, to complicate it even more, is predicting it will keep interest rates near zero for years. That's the opposite of what they usually do to tame inflation. Now, one thing we know, the low number of jobs led Republicans to complain that pandemic unemployment benefits are causing people to not take jobs that are available to them, forcing President Biden now to say this.
Anyone collecting unemployment who is offered a suitable job must take the job or lose their unemployment benefits.
But it's not that simple, according to the president. Biden also said this.
Americans want to work. Americans want to work.
And he also said this.
Our economy can't achieve its full potential until we get more people vaccinated.
Vaccinated? Since when is that an economic indicator? So what the heck is going on with the economy and how might it affect you? With me now, Jim Tankersley, New York Times White House correspondent, self-described economic policy nerd, and author of the book published last year called The Riches of This Land, about the people who built the middle class in this country and how he says they are the ones who can get us out of the current economic crisis. Jim, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's a delight.
Can you describe this morning's Consumer Price Index report in some more detail? It's only like an hour and a half old.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the very basic way to describe it is that we knew there would be inflation showing up this month, particularly because prices kind of fell a lot last year in the midst of the pandemic at this time. And we knew there'd be a big rebound that, hey, a year later, the economy's getting back to life again and prices are going up again. But the big news out of this report is it's rising faster than we thought. And that's true kind of across the board. It's true that like food and fuel, more volatile parts of the economy, are seeing their prices rise month over month, not just year over year, at a faster rate than forecasters expected. But it's also true that things like used cars are just getting much more expensive, much faster. And I think the easiest way to read this report is that it's a real sign that right now in our economy, we have a mismatch between the things people want to spend money on and what's available. And whether that mismatch persists and leads to like a long-running big inflationary spiral is an open question right now. But certainly for the moment, for lots of reasons that have sometimes very little to do with public policy, there's just a bunch of stuff people want to buy that they can't get enough of, and so prices are going up.
We're in such a weird moment of recovery from a voluntary shutdown of the economy because of the pandemic. How do we know if anything right now predicts longer-term problems or good times?
We don't. I mean, I think we know a few things based on some fundamentals of the economy. You know, we knew we were going to see higher year over year inflation than what, you know, it would look to some degree like a mirage. And there's some of that here for sure. But I think that, you know, on the other points, it's really hard to tell. And so that's why, you know, economists always caution, don't read too much into 1 month's jobs report or 1 month's inflation report. But now in particular seems like the right time for everybody to kind of take a deep breath and then try to wait a couple of months for more data. You know, we just don't know, for example, if a whole bunch of workers are going to come in off the sidelines and start taking jobs once they're fully vaccinated. We think they will. That's what history suggests. But we're not sure. And that number is going up every month. We also don't know, you know, if right now the restrictions that are still in place on things like restaurant capacity are driving up prices in restaurants to a greater degree than they will be when everybody can reopen fully. So, like you said, it's an unprecedented time for those of us who follow this stuff.
Jim, what'd you think of Biden's relating the low job numbers to needing a higher vaccination rate? Because people are still uncertain about the safety of many workplaces. We know that. But does it relate to this?
There's definitely an effect. I think whether it is the dominant effect that explains the miss on Friday between what economists had expected and what we actually saw, I'm not fully sold on that. But the numbers are stark. It's more, you know, from the time that the jobs report data were compiled in mid-April until when they were released, another, I think, 20 million, 20 plus million Americans, you know, got fully vaccinated. And that's a lot. I mean, working age Americans. So that's a lot of people to suddenly be available, perhaps to go to work who hadn't felt safe doing so. And I think, you know, obviously we've seen in the last, you know, several weeks is a declining rate of vaccination. So if that is really what is holding people back, I think we will see that reflected in a pretty strong number next month. Like, okay, people are vaccinated, they want to go back to work, they're going to. But it's as you alluded to, it's not just whether people feel like they are safe going back into the office or taking a job in a restaurant again. It's also about, you know, whether they are physically able to do it because they have somewhere safe to send their kids, whether that's to school or childcare. And there, I think we still have pretty good evidence that there is a supply constraint in the economy of childcare, and that is holding back in particular working women in a way that could be resolved hopefully in the next few months, but could also be a real drag on this recovery.
Let's take a phone call. Linda in Nassau County. You're on WNYC. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I just wanted to say that my husband is a contractor and a business owner, and the supply of things like plywood, anything you need, any kind of building materials, any kind of doors, even the hardware, everything is backed up. And of course, you know, there have been reports on the ports in California having days, you know, weeks of backup there. And, you know, then you put on top of that the whole computer chip, you know, problem and the fact that they just didn't produce things last year. Last year was a tremendous year where things just were not produced. If you pull back production and then you expect that, you know, when the economy starts to open up and, you know, people want to go back to work and they want to produce, you know, get their jobs done in a timely manner, if the product, you know, for your business is not there, it's a tremendous mismatch.
This is a piece of it that we didn't even mention so far. Product unavailability that something like a contracting business would need in order to go forward. Jim, I'm curious for you as an economics reporter, have any question that you want to ask Linda before I let her go?
I mean, I think you're really well describing a phenomenon we've seen. And I'm just curious of your husband's business. Has he seen a surge in demand for people who want his services over the last few months?
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. People want to, you know, fix, first of all, they're getting their tax returns back. They got stimulus money. a lot of people in our area have worked all the way through. I'm just happened to be very lucky in that respect, you know. And then the other thing that you know, when you talk about child care and the people that are unemployed, you know, maybe holding back, if you look at the amount of money that somebody gets in the New York area on unemployment, it's not, you can't survive on it. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe in a very low income area they could survive on it, but you cannot survive on unemployment in New York.
Linda,
I mean, all unemployment pays for is health insurance.
Linda, thank you so much for your call. Really informative. And Jim, to her last point, I read a stat that the only people who refuse jobs are low-paid workers well below the national median income, which doesn't even account for the higher cost of living in an area like New York, those national stats. And so there's an argument that if lowly unemployment benefits are better than pay at a job, it shows employers are getting over on their workers way too much with low wages. How much do you agree with that? Maybe Linda's call is a little bit of evidence of that, or see it as an analysis of an economic reality in this country of why people aren't taking jobs.
Well, I do think, just to step back for a second, I don't think that's what the policy was meant to do. And the policy was meant to help people who had lost jobs through no fault of their own, and then to help people who for whom it wasn't safe to return to work yet, and, you know, and to try to replace their lost wages. It wasn't meant to be a sword wielded at companies to force them to raise wages to get people back. Although, you know, some progressives have sort of embraced that argument, I think, in recent weeks. So I think it's important to remember, like, the point here was to try to keep people whole if they were tossed out of the job market. And then there's this separate question about whether wages are sufficient. I think, you know, for a lot of people, they obviously aren't. And, you know, we have way too many people who earn way too little, you know, not a middle class income in this country. But I think the sort of what is happening right now is much more complicated than that. It's not just, oh, companies aren't paying enough to their workers, and they need to do that if they want to get them off the sidelines. It's that there's just been these huge changes in supply and demand, like Linda was talking about. And so in some places, workers are in huge demand, and they're having to raise wages a lot to try to get people in, and they, you know, they can't get the materials to sell to the customers that they want. And so, you know, you're not seeing the boom in construction jobs, for example, you might like to see, because those are very high-paying jobs, and their wages are going up. But in, for example, in the hospitality sector, wages are having to go up because restaurants are having to find ways, either through signing bonuses. My colleague Gina Smalek and I wrote about this week. Signing bonuses, other sort of you know, enticements to get people to come to work for them, because either they have more options, or they are able to still collect unemployment, or they're, you know, still nervous about returning to work, and companies have ways of trying to get people over that those humps, and they're turning to them. But the thing that they do not seem to be doing as of yet across the economy is, like, sort of wide scale wage increases like what you're talking about.
Let's take another call. James in the Bronx. You're on WNYC with Jim Tankersley, White House correspondent and economics reporter for the New York Times. Hi, James.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call, Brian. Big fan. One of the things that I don't think is really being taken into account is the individual agency of workers. In the pandemic, for people who didn't lose their jobs, we've had an opportunity to see a different future for what employment could look like. We've had the opportunity to see what a flexible hybrid option is. And a lot of employers are just expecting, now that vaccinations are up and wages are back, that workers are just going to be chomping at the bit to return back to work. And that's not the case. I left my job. I took a buyout option during the course of the pandemic just so I could focus on finishing my master's degree. And one of the things that I'm looking for in the job hunt right now is not just a standard 9-to-5. That's not what I'm interested in. I've had the opportunity through internships to view alternative possibilities, and I want that in my future career. I'm young enough that I want that, and no employer really seems to be interested in providing that to me at the moment. So I'm going to keep hunting until I find it. And it's not that I'm not interested in going back to work for Starbucks or Chipotle for $15 an hour, when the possibility exists for more. Thank you.
Thank you, James in the Bronx. How about James in Washington. What do you think about that?
My friend Heather Long, who is an economics writer for the Washington Post, had a really interesting piece on this on Friday. Basically, this idea that there's a great reassessment going on among workers across the economy. People sort of saying, "Hey, I don't necessarily want to go back to the job that I was shoved out of a year ago." And I do think some of that has to do with questions of like remote work and more flexibility. I know big companies, including the New York Times, are juggling that with their workers' demands right now. But I also think it's this question of people have a little more ability maybe to step back and take a little bit of time to think about those things because they've gotten a lot of help from the government over the last year. You know, if we've seen typical American savings have actually gone up in the pandemic because of the large amount of government aid. And so if right now you have a few more weeks to be choosy about which job to take, maybe you're doing that. We don't know for sure in the data that that's what's happening, but I think it's a very plausible story for why you might see the rebound in job creation to be a little slower than we thought.
Angel in Trenton, you're on WNYC. Angel, thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned primarily with the living wage, as well as is there a different living wage for people whose children are below school age? In other words, people who need to pay for care for their child. If it would almost be illogical when taking worker agency into account to expect a person who is taking care of their child now and not receiving a government stipend if they return to work to then resume paying for their child care, or if their child is in hybrid learning, they would now have to be paying an additional sum for a school-age child who is not being seen in person in a school district more than 2 and possibly 3 days per week. So they would have to, in order to return to work, they would have to pay more than they were prior paying for childcare, while possibly not even making a living wage. It would almost be illogical for anyone to return to work while making a non-living wage if they have school-age children or children under the age of school age.
It's such a great point, and in fact, it's one that the president himself makes. He's got this families plan, right, that's part of the big two-part infrastructure plan with affordable child care to working families and the preschool for 3- and 4-year-olds. And it makes intuitive sense, right? If people have kids in hybrid school or are uncertain about September reopenings, plus everything else that Angel just said from Trenton, they don't know how much they can work, Jim.
Yeah. Yes. And I think actually, you know, this is one of the more overlooked parts of the American Rescue Plan, the $1.9 trillion aid package that the president signed into law in March. There's actually a lot in there to help with childcare, to help lower and middle income families afford it. There's a tax doubling of a tax credit for it, and then there is this monthly stipend to all parents, whether their kids are in childcare or not, up and down the income spectrum, with a pretty high cap, actually. So almost everybody who has a kid in America is eligible for some form of it. So it's not enough to, you know, dramatically change the living wage calculation for all parents, particularly parents who are just earning a median income. But there's a lot there. There's thousands of dollars a year there for people, and that could make a real difference. But that's a one-year program. That's why the president's pushing for this American Families Plan, which would be a much more sustained effort to reduce child care costs, to give more money to parents, to make the expansion of the child tax credit permanent. And the White House, even today, is going to sort of lean into that argument and basically say, look, we need more of this. We need an economy where parents have the support they need to work to the degree that they want to. That's going to make them more productive.
Jennifer, who it looks like is calling from the Caribbean. Is that right, Jennifer? And
yes,
if so,
Brian.
Where in the Caribbean? It's a big place with many countries.
I'm in Barbados, Brian. I'm in Barbados, but I miss my home, New York.
I'm so,
my
so
story
glad
is
you're listening.
That
Go
I
ahead.
Came, sorry, I came here to find work because America doesn't want to hire older people anymore. Is this a chance to pivot Is it a chance to give us the opportunity to get back into the workforce so we don't have to leave to go outside to work? Why
Jim?
Are we being put mm-hmm. aside, Jim? Is there a chance?
Calling the guest by name, Jim, it's on you.
No. I think that that's right. I think what we're seeing, it's, I mean, I can't hire that many people myself, so I don't know that it's on me. But the stats tell us that we have seen a wave of what appear to be retirements of older workers in America because of the pandemic. They sort of either they lost their jobs and they've retired, or they're having a hard time getting their way back into the workforce. And so, yeah, I think the longer this goes on, that there are 8 million jobs open across the economy and not enough workers to fill those, the more the opportunity should be for, you know, workers who have been in the labor force a lot longer, older workers, to be able to successfully gain those jobs. And I think, you know, obviously, this is something that is not new to this recovery. But I think there may be a real chance here, especially in the next couple of months, for older Americans who want to get back into the labor force to do so.
Jennifer, are you finding it easier to find work in Barbados?
Yes, I am. I mean, I live, you know, in between the U.S. and Barbados, have been for years. But it is crazy that I work remotely. I am tech savvy. I am very astute at business. I do business consulting. Mm-hmm. And I have tried repeatedly to get work. So I'm hoping this is a chance. This is an opportunity for us, older girls and guys, to get back out there.
Jennifer, thank you. And please call us again from Barbados, or if you come back home to New York, call us again. Jim, she mentioned older workers. You mentioned some things with older workers. Is there a fear of COVID that runs along an age spectrum? So because older people are more vulnerable to getting really bad COVID if they get it, that they're resistant to returning to work for that reason?
I don't know. Actually, I haven't seen data on that sort of fear of returning to work broken out by age. What we do know, though, is that older Americans were faster to get vaccinated. And so if anything, they should have kind of less competition in the ranks of the vaccinated versus sort of younger workers who have had to wait a little bit longer. And in particular, I would think that you might see that a little bit, if you're going to see it, you would see it in this month's jobs report for May, because that's where, you know, the gap is starting to close. And the younger workers or younger Americans who want to work and want to be vaccinated are basically catching up now. But there was this sort of window when there really were more people, you know, over the age of 50 or 60 getting vaccines than certainly people over the age of 18.
And this has been a gender uneven recession, with women being hit much harder than men, the opposite of the Great Recession of 10, 12 years ago. And of course, it's women who also do the most childcare. Our caller Angel from Trenton was talking about this before, but how do you see the recovery so far in gender terms in the job market? Are the jobs for women that got lost disproportionately coming back disproportionately?
I think what we're seeing in the job market is that women continue to bear the brunt of this childcare crunch in the country, that particularly mothers are just not returning to jobs as fast. And you know, that is a real problem for the economy. It is if we can't figure that out and solve it, we are going to permanently lose or for a long time lose an incredibly highly skilled group of workers who, you know, because of social expectations, are the ones being forced to bear the brunt of a broken childcare system across the country right now. And so there's obviously a lot of debate in Washington about what to do about this, but I think the data are really clear. We need and want more women to be able to return to work, and we just haven't gotten there yet.
Jim Tankersley, New York Times White House correspondent, self-described economic policy nerd, and author of the book, The Riches of This Land, about the people who built the middle class in this country and how they are the ones who can get us out of the current economic crisis and Jim's article that you may have seen in the Times yesterday about Rehoboth Beach, that beach economy as a microcosm of what's going on nationwide now with offering people free subs and IPA beers and stuff like that to get them back to work. Jim, really informative. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.